Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. UFC 324, UFC 325 in the books, the first two events of the Paramount era and for the UFC in 2026 have come and gone. A lot of big things happening both in the lightweight and featherweight divisions on those cards. Of course, we recapped UFC 324 a little bit with Eric Nixick last week when I was stuck in Las Vegas. Hope you all enjoyed that. And then this past Saturday, Alexander Volkanovski obviously goes in there and does it again against Diego Lopez, defends that featherweight title for the first time in his second reign as champion in this division, further solidifying his status as perhaps the featherweight GOAT, at least in my mind, he is. And a lot of interesting things to move forward with in that weight class. Of course, a title eliminator seemingly between Movsar Evloev and Lerone Murphy being announced for the UFC London headliner on March 21st. The winner of that fight most definitely should get Volkanovski, but we shall wait and see. And then lightweight, a lot going on there too, coming off of Justin Gaethje's interim title win over Paddy Pimblett. The wins for Benoit St. Denis and Mauricio Hufi in Sydney as well added to the conversation at lightweight. We have a BMF title fight coming up at 155 pounds at UFC 326. Joining us to discuss all of this will be the former champion of the lightweight division, a multi-time title challenger at featherweight. He is a UFC Hall of Famer. He is the answer. He is Frankie Edgar, making his debut on the Bonfire Podcast to go through it all, the state of 145, 155, reflections on his UFC debut, which happened 19 years ago today, February 3rd, 2007. Frankie Edgar makes his debut against Tyson Griffin at UFC 67. Coincidentally, the first UFC event I ever attended as a fan. I was sitting there. I was right where he walked out, the first fighter to walk out on that UFC 67 card, which was incredible. Had the octagon debuts of Frankie Edgar, of Lyoto Machida, of Quentin Rampage Jackson, and of Mirko Krokop. So that was a hell of an event, and we're going to go down memory lane a little bit with Frankie, thinking back to his UFC debut almost two decades ago now. So a very enjoyable conversation with Frankie Edgar that is coming right up. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, follow, comment, all those things. Share it with a friend. Means a lot to us here on the Bonfire as we try to continue growing the program. That does it for the intro here. I will be right back on the other side of the break with Frankie Edgar. We are back here on the Bonfire Podcast with one of the all-time greats, UFC Hall of Famer, Frankie Edgar. Frankie, thank you so much for doing this. How are you, man?
I'm good. My pleasure, man. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Awesome time to kind of get to speak with you because today, February 3rd, is the 19-year anniversary of your UFC debut at UFC 67, and that was the first event I actually ever attended as a fan. I was 15 years old, and I actually have the program here still.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it's pretty crazy to go through like a handwritten note from Dana White in there, like talking
very
to
cool.
Fans. You obviously fought Tyson Griffin on that night. You're listed as Frank Edgar in the program here. Was that like what you wanted them to call you off the start?
No, I don't know. I don't know how that happened. Then it kind of all happened so quick. I remember, I didn't even have a walkout song. I think I used their walkout song because I remember, I fought in a local scene. I got this short notice fight to fight in the UFC, and I brought a CD. I brought my walkout music, and I remember the night of the fight, I'm like, hey, I got my walkout music. Who are you giving this to? He's like, no, you should have done that a long time ago, buddy. We got a song for you. So
that's hilarious. Obviously, yeah, fight of the night that night with Tyson Griffin. This is what it said in the program here. I pulled up an image here under your thing. You didn't get the photo treatment. They only gave it to Tyson in the program here, but you said of this fight, I'm just skipping to it now. This is great considering I only started fighting a year and a half ago and there wasn't even a 155 weight class at the time. That was your comment in the program there. And what are your kind of memories of that incredible fight? I saw someone even post today when I did something of the program being like, that to me is still a top 25 fight in all of UFC history.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I left it out there. Obviously got caught in that knee bar at the end. What I remember is I remember walking out. I was so tired. I took the fight on short notice and I got, I got really sick. I had one of the worst sinus infections of my life for like 2 weeks at that camp. So I really only trained for 2 weeks So I wasn't in the best shape. And I, you know, that was a hell of a fight, a pace of a fight. And I obviously gritted through it. And I remember being in the back, like lying on the floor. I threw up. I thought I had a concussion. I threw up from being so tired.
Yeah.
And I remember someone's like, "Hey, Lorenzo's here to see you." And I'm like, "Tell him to come back." I didn't know. I had no idea who Lorenzo was at the time. He's like, no, you're going to get up for Lorenzo. So I remember he came in and then, you know, just congratulated my fight. So it was a funny story.
Yeah, you guys got fight of the night. I can't find anywhere what the bonus amount was for that event. Do you remember what your fight of the night was?
Oh, yeah. It was 20 G's, $20,000 bonus. And I mean, geez, I was making 3 and 3. So that 20 G's was pretty incredible.
Yeah, geez, that's very incredible. And then funny enough, like I said, that was my first UFC event I went to. And this was at the Mandalay Bay where you could kind of sneak around a little bit more backstage. And I remember I ran into you and your team post fight and I took this photo here.
Hell yeah.
Which is pretty incredible. So awesome. Who are all the people in this photo, if you can see them all?
I definitely recognize some of them. I know I don't. This is the first team that I trained with. I don't really train with these guys anymore, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's that's crazy. But I remember taking that and I was so excited to see you. And yeah, obviously that was the start of a Hall of Fame career for you and just an incredible night. You got 8 fight of the nights during your UFC career, tied for the 4th most in UFC history. The only people more that have more than you are Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, and Edson Barboza, which is a pretty elite group. But can you even put them in tiers? Like, does someone call that a top 20 fight in UFC history? Where would you rank it among your fight of the nights with Tyson Griffin, do you think?
I don't know. Like, you know, I've had so many, but I mean, it's got to be up there with one of them just because it was the first one. You know, it's kind of like lost my virginity in the UFC cage right there. It was definitely memorable.
Yeah, man. Such a different era. Like, I was watching back that event and it was cool too. You can see me during the walkouts. I just bought like one ticket to go by myself because my mom was there for a work conference. I was only 15 at the time. And the seat I got is right where you guys walked out. So you can see me on the broadcast behind you when you're walking out, like my UFC sweater freaking out and stuff. It was so cool. But just the energy of those. Like, I remember after the event, Mask, rest in peace,
stopped
me and was like, "What are you doing here by yourself?" And he gave me all his wristbands and stuff because he thought it was like so cool I went to an event on my own. But yeah,
that's, man, awesome.
The sport was just so raw compared to then. But
oh yeah,
if you could be there, it's, I mean, is it crazy to you that you think this journey started for you almost 20 years ago now?
Yeah, I mean, it just, like, it doesn't feel like it feels like yesterday. I mean, feels like yesterday, but also feels like ages ago at the same time. You know, all the experiences that I've had and the places I've gone, all that stuff, I never would imagine it.
Yeah, man. No, you had an incredible career and obviously, you know, one of the all-time greats at lightweight and featherweight, which are two divisions very much in the spotlight right now as we kick off 2026, you know, UFC 324. We had Justin Gaethje defeat Paddy Pimblett for that interim belt. And then this past weekend, which is where I want to start, kind of the state of the featherweight division, Alexander Volkanovski defeating Diego Lopez again. What he's doing is pretty remarkable, man. Like, after those two knockout losses, to come back and do this at 37 years old, what did you make of, you know, Volkanovski and his win and just continuing to stretch on here at the highest level?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. You know, obviously being an older guy myself, I'm always pulling for the old heads nowadays, seems like. And, the stat, like, everybody 170 and under, if they're over 35, it's like, you know, 3-60 or something, the record. Well, now it's 4-60 because this guy keeps getting it done. And I think that's just so impressive. He's like literally beating Father Time.
Yeah. What did you just make of that fight? I mean, I think some people had some problems with, you know, Diego getting the rematch so soon, but maybe thought he could do some different stuff. But my thought on the first fight was he had a lot of trouble cutting Volkanovski off. And it seemed like he tried to do some of that. But then Volk's corner said, just circle the other way, switch your stance. Yeah. And he couldn't really figure it out.
Yeah, I think Volk's feet, you know, his feet looked really good in this fight. You know, he made the adjustments that he needed to make. You know, he's just such a veteran in there. You know, he's so poised and he's never panicked. You know what I mean? He just dictates where the fight goes.
Mm-hmm. And just for him to come back after the knockout loss to Islam Makhachev, the knockout loss to Ilya Topuria, I believe the first guy ever to be knocked out in back-to-back title fights, then come back and win a title fight. How unique and impressive is that to you to be able to kind of pull this off after suffering the damage he did in those couple of bouts?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of trying it myself. So the fact that he got it done, it's cool to say it can happen. And That's just for all these fighters out there. You see some guy get it done once, then you're like, all right, that's attainable. So he's definitely motivating a lot of people out there.
Mm-hmm. And I think this conversation has been opened up once again here after this win. It's like, who is the featherweight GOAT? He ties Jose Aldo for the most title fight victories at 8. Aldo has 11 if you include his WEC ones, which I think a lot of people do in their minds, but the official stats do not. But man, I feel like the debate is between him at featherweight and Jose Aldo. You fought them both. Who is your featherweight GOAT?
You know, I just think it's so tough to pick the GOATs of these weight classes. I think in my era was Aldo, without a doubt, like hands down. And then in the next era, it's without a doubt Alex, you know? So that's, you got to kind of do. It's tough to, you know, even though they fought each other when, you know, they were at totally different stages in their career. So it's kind of hard to even compare those two.
Yeah, no, I love that you say that. And I'm kind of getting swayed more and more that direction when it comes up. It's like, it's just so unfair to compare, you know, where the sport has been and where it's come. Like, it's such a short time and it evolves so quickly that, you know, how are you supposed to determine who would beat who if they were in their absolute prime? But those two have been incredible. And yeah, Volkanovski, I mean, to come back and do this run, but I'm sure you, being from that time, probably have a soft spot in your heart for Jose Aldo, right?
Yeah, for real. You know, obviously shared a cage with him a whole bunch, and you know, he did great things even late in his career too. So he's still an OG for sure.
Yeah, definitely. This featherweight division's interesting right now. I mean, I feel like a lot of people thought it should have been either Movsar Evloev or Lerone Murphy in there. Those two are now announced to fight in the London main event, two undefeated guys. Does this look like a clear number one contender fight for you between these two?
Yeah, it has to go that way. You know, those guys are the guys, you know what I mean? Volkanovski pretty much beat everybody else. So, yeah, I think the winner of that, you know, I think Volkanovski can kind of sit back and just wait for that guy. Wait for it. I'll be honest, I would love Volkanovski to say, I'm out. I'm leaving as the champion, you know, because who gets to do that any nowadays? Nobody. And not many people get their flowers in this sport, unfortunately. And, you know, he's in a position where he can. But I totally get why he doesn't want to, because he's still competing, still the best in the world.
Yeah, four girls too, so I'm sure you could relate to that. The money is just probably getting very good for him right now. So
that's true. That is true.
But does, like, you know, his legacy is very much entrenched. I don't think it changed a bit from beating Diego once to twice. But if he can beat one of these undefeated guys, a Murphy and Evloev, like, does that change, you know, where you see his legacy and enhance it in a significant way? Or would you basically look at it the same as now?
No, I think it will, because then kind of, you know, like, he's a little bit long in the tooth now, and he goes and gets these younger guys. It kind of, like, he starts bridging into the next generation. So, yeah, I think it just shows how much of a force he was if he's able to do that.
Yeah. And on the other side of the coin, I mean, Diego Lopez, clearly a talented fighter, clearly a hard worker, but he's in this sucky position now of two losses to the champion. Did you see, like, you know, traits of his game there that if he makes some more adjustments that he could maybe, like, make another run, and if Volkanovski retires, maybe get another chance at that belt? Or do you feel like his window kind of passed with this loss?
No, I think he's still in there. He's still in the mix. You know, sometimes matchups just are the way they are. And maybe Volkanovski is just a bad matchup for him. So I definitely, before we write him off, you got to throw him back in there. And, you know, he's a young kid too. He's kind of big. I mean, he could end up a weight class as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, he kind of hinted pre-fight, like, this is going to be my last chance at this belt, which made me feel like maybe in the back of his mind, lightweight is there. And you kind of made that call a couple times, right? A couple title fight losses and you make the switch. What's the hardest part, or the things you have to go through? Obviously, everyone has their own career, and ultimately, like, pondering that, but now is the time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just based on, for me, it was like, quickest way to do a title. That's kind of what I was thinking at the time. You know, when I was at or lightweight, I lost the belt twice. You know, again, kind of like Lopez, you know, I lost to Henderson once, and I lost him in a rematch. It's like, I know I'm not going to get that title shot for a while. So let me go down to 45. And I ended up getting that title shot against Jose. And I guess even kind of for 35, it was more my coaches kind of saying, hey, buddy, you're a 35 pounder. So imagine you can make 35. But I think just gives you that chance of maybe just, you know, elongating a career and possibly going after another title.
Yeah, it was a constant narrative. Anything else that interests you at welterweight or at light featherweight right now? John Silva is a kind of interesting, unique character. Aljamain Sterling is looming out there still.
Yeah. I think Aljamain is a force. I mean, his fight with Mosvar was very close. And John Silva, yeah, he's a character. He's in there barking at everybody. He's fun. It's fun to watch. You know, it's kind of like the UFC is a little bit of a soap opera. You know what I mean? Everyone's got their little characters in this show. So it's fun to sit back and watch.
Yeah. When you look at featherweights now, like do you see a dramatic difference in between your era, like the talent, the size of these guys, or does it generally feel a bit of the same?
No, I think these guys are getting bigger and bigger. It's crazy and better, man. And all, you know, it's the sport is still new. That's the crazy thing, you know. So it's amazing how much it's gotten better. And it was cool to be able to be part of it for such a long time. But seeing where it's going now is fun.
For sure. Well, the same could be said for lightweight, which we'll kind of move on to now. A very fascinating division right now. So many different elements. There's three belts in this UFC lightweight division right now. Ilya Topuria's got one. Max Holloway's got the BMF. And then Justin Gaethje has got the interim. I guess we could start with what happened at UFC 324. What did you think of the Justin Gaethje-Paddy Pimblett fight?
Yeah, I think Justin kind of just said, I don't need to really worry about too much technique or anything. I'm just going to walk this dude down and get this victory. And that's pretty much what he did. I felt like some Gaethje fights in the past, recent past, you started seeing a little bit more tact, a little bit more technique. And this one, he was like kind of threw out the window and said, hey, I'm just going to get this.
Yeah, no, he's he went balls to the walls in that one. I feel like that was the fight they wanted for the Paramount opener, right? Like I saw some people comparing it in a way to like Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner, yeah, and being right. This is a great introduction if you're just watching this for the first time. But a lot of people thought maybe Paddy Pimblett shouldn't be there, that he was kind of getting the favorable push to the top of the UFC. Like when you looked at him, did you see a guy that belongs there? Does he have a lot of work to do? What's your take on Paddy Pimblett?
I think he has some work to do. He's got to be able to, his best attribute, I think, is, grappling and being on the ground. So he's got to figure ways to get to that. I don't know if he was saying like, hey, I'm going to try to stand with Justin just to prove a point or whatever. But that's not the best option, I think, when you're standing in front of Justin Gaethje. I don't think you can write him off quite yet either. He's won some big fights and he's got such a, he's such a character, has a great personality, and I definitely think the UFC will be behind him for quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we're seeing more and more of these guys, like Paddy, very good at on the ground, but the ability to actually get it there with the wrestling, that in between game, seems to be something like some of these guys lack a bit, that are really good on the ground but struggle. Like, what do you think is missing? Are they just not training enough wrestling? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, I mean, wrestling just it's tough to wrestle's probably the toughest one to pick up, like George St. Pierre, that was crazy what he did. Never wrestled ever, but he picked up wrestling great, but a lot of people everybody's decent at defending shots now, so you got to kind of go second, third option. Mm-hmm. Or be a dog and be like, I'm getting this takedown. You can't kind of half shoot anymore. You got to really go for it.
Yeah. No. Do you feel like the reason people know is maybe just the fear of getting tired? Like that was something we knew about you. You could shoot 30 takedowns in a fight like Merab Dvalishvili. You ain't going to get tired in there. But some of these guys fear, you fail on a couple and that's can be a game changer.
You'll see a lot of wrestlers. I mean, even kind of myself, you kind of fall in love with boxing a little bit, because I'm not saying it's easier because you're getting punched and stuff, but wrestling is just, very taxing on your body. So to do it over and over, the juice better be worth the squeeze. So you better be getting these takedowns.
Yeah. I feel like I go into a lot of these gyms now or talk to these coaches, and like a lot of the training and the orientation is like training on get ups, using the cage and striking. Like you don't see a ton of bottom game jiu-jitsu training. Like are you seeing that in the gyms? Does that feel like what the sport is trending towards? Just like learn how to get up and learn how to strike, but not so much how to do all the other stuff on the ground and in between moments.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm kind of like old school a little bit in that aspect. I feel like with Ricardo Mato, he made us always work on retaining our guard, getting up from bottom, having sweeps, more of like, you see these guys that are pretty high level guys, they'll get mounted and like they're kind of lost, which is crazy because they're just never put in that position. So you got to constantly put yourself in these bad positions so you don't have these holes. It's that people aren't really playing jiu-jitsu anymore. They're getting taken down and trying to get back to their feet. So you really need to be, these guys need to be grappling more than doing jiu-jitsu. You know, grappling is like combining all the jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, you know, combining those all together and putting them into grappling for MMA as opposed to just, you know, playing the bottom game.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I was watching this card back that you debuted on. Obviously, the main event was Anderson Silva versus Travis Luter. Travis Luter missed weight for a title fight, but like at one point, he had Anderson fully mounted. He's ground and pounding him, and then Anderson submits him from the bottom with like elbows and a triangle armbar combination. You don't really see the stuff as much anymore. And when it does hit the ground, it seems to be position over submission and ground and pound to like a significant degree now, not as much of the risk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's not that people don't know jiu-jitsu. It's, I think, the fact that everybody knows jiu-jitsu nowadays.
It's tougher to find those openings. What do you make of a potential fight between Justin Gaethje and Ilya Topuria? Ilya Topuria is obviously fantastic. Hopefully he gets all this personal stuff sorted out and we can see him back soon. But, you know, Justin, late in his career, he's had, you know, a few opportunities here, and this I assume would be the last one. Do you think he has the skills to make something interesting and potentially give Ilya Topuria his first loss?
I think Justin, just based on the type of fighter he is, he could put anybody away. You know, he has the power and the grit and the balls to stand there and swing with anybody. So yeah, I do think it's a possibility. Is it, you know, if you weigh the odds, I mean, the odds are definitely in Topuria's favor. He's got dynamite in his hands. He's super technical. Whereas I don't know, I wouldn't say Gaethje's not technical. He's just like, maybe not as clean as Topuria. So I don't know if Topuria could find these holes. Obviously, I'm buddies with Gaethje, and would love for it to, like I said, we'd love for him to go out there and, you know, get Topuria and get his hand raised and walk away with, like a champ. That would be an amazing story. So, but it's a tall mountain to climb.
It is. What do you think of Ilya Topuria's boxing, where like he ranks among the best? I mean, there was a time where people thought you had the best boxing in the UFC. BJ Penn, who you beat up a few times, like they've all been in the conversation. I feel like now Max Holloway was another one. But I feel like when people talk about that person, the name that comes up the most often now is Ilya Topuria.
Absolutely. You just see him. You could just watch. He looks different than everyone else. His balance is the best. His feet are always in position. He sits down his punches, doesn't try to knock you out. He just hits naturally hard. I think he probably just always hit hard, and that was a kind of a gift. But with his technique on top of his speed, his timing, I mean, he's a hammer.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Such a young guy, too. Like, when you see that, is some of the stuff there just things you can't learn, like the comfort and just the natural stance and all that stuff? Like, some of it must just be, like, inherent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's confidence. You know, that confidence is, I mean, he has every right to have that confidence because the skills he obtains, he's not like, there's no false confidence in him. No. And he goes out there and proves it, you know, time and time. You just hope that, because, you know, you see this with these superstars. Let the outside life starts affecting their fighting. So who knows with that? Hopefully he does get all that stuff squared away. I'd hate to see that affect his career.
Yeah, I mean, do you like fighters push through things all the time in outside of the cage? Personally, I mean, you have been in this for 20 years. You hear some horror stories of things that have happened right before the fight, things like that. You know, fans don't care about those things. Sometimes they say, just get in there and fight. Like, is it nice to see, at least in that spot, that he was able to, I guess, put life first and step aside and, you know, focus on the things that need to be focused on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the right thing. You know, us fighters don't always do the right thing, but it seems like he did. He to put his family first, and I think that is the most important thing. So yeah, just hope it all turns out in the right way for him.
Yeah, a lot of other things going on at lightweight here. The next numbered event, I guess we're not calling them pay-per-views anymore, UFC 326, headlined by two men you know quite well in Max Holloway and Charles Oliveira. You fought them both for this BMF title. What's kind of your analysis of this rematch? I think it's the longest span between a first fight and a second fight in UFC history.
Wow. I think Holloway is on a tear, kind of like a resurgence a little bit. 55 is definitely his weight class now. I think going down to 45, too taxing on him. Oliveira, I don't know. You know, Oliveira, sometimes you just wonder. You know, he had such a up and down type of career until he became the champion, and you just wonder if he's still hungry. That's what I wonder. I feel like Holloway still is chasing a bone.
Yeah, I mean, I think both these guys would love to get fights with Topuria back. They're not happy with their performances, but like a fitting, what do you just think of this BMF title as a whole? Like, you know, it's kind of a weird thing to start, but Max Holloway, I think, has legitimized it a little bit. I mean, the Justin Gaethje fight at UFC 300 is an all-time moment in UFC history. And then him and Dustin had a great fight. Like, what do you make of this belt? That's not a real
cool
belt,
but, yeah. I think it's cool. I mean, it's cool. It's kind of fitting. The guys that are fighting for it right now, I mean, it's fitting, you know? Again, it's just, it's good for the fans, good for the entertainment part of it, you know? And I mean, I guess they don't have to sell pay-per-views anymore, but, you know, it gets people into it, gets them interested.
Yeah. So you're leaning towards Max in that rematch, you think?
Yeah, I think Max is going to get it done in that rematch.
Yeah. It's he said that the most BMF way to win this fight would be to submit Charles Oliveira. is that just talk, you think? Maybe some mind games?
Yeah, I don't. It's gonna be. I mean, maybe if he rocks him or something, he could submit him. But you know, I think it'd be tough for him to land that submission. But hey, I ain't sleeping on Max.
No, I mean you can't. And you think the move to lightweight was maybe overdue and the right call for his career?
Yeah, I definitely think that was what he needed to do. You know, when he went up, looked great against Gaethje, and then when he went back down against Topuria, I think that weight cut might have had a little effect on you know, his chin or what, you know, whatever, just his durability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the winner of that, I think, will be very much in line for maybe that rematch. But I think the person they're battling with narrative wise is Armin Sarukian, mm-hmm. who is clearly an extreme talent, but finds himself deep in the doghouse with the UFC. And I don't know what his path to getting out is. What do you think of this, like, Armin Sarukian situation? Do you feel like this, he's being punished enough at this point, or is there more work to do to get back on Dana and Hunter Campbell's good side?
Yeah, I think he's been punished enough. I think he was the backup a couple times, you know, as long as he made wage, proved he could do it. I'm sure that's kind of what really went down, is, you know, he might have been slipped up on a weigh-in or something. And, you know, I think kind of that's really what went down. So now that they know he can make weight, he's definitely deserving. I definitely want to see that fight. I think he probably is the number one contender at 55.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think there is a valid conversation of who is the best lightweight in the world. I mean, we've only seen one Ilya Topuria fight at lightweight, even though it was incredible. But the body of work for Armin Sarukian is a lot fuller. So I feel like that's the fight we need to kind of determine, and not to disrespect Justin Gaethje at all. He obviously earned this position. I think they need to do the unification fight, because if you're going to make an interim, you got to do right by the fighter. But you just wonder what this outlook is for Armin this year with all these guys matched up. He's the odd man out here for sure.
Yeah, no, for definitely. But you know, he's competing in wrestling. He's competing in jiu-jitsu. I see him like skiing down mountain, eating like sandwiches and stuff. So he's doing all right. I think Armand will be all right. Again, he's another one of these characters in our little soap opera, the UFC, and he's fun to watch. And he's definitely a great fighter. I mean, he gave Islam his toughest fight, I think.
Yeah, I thought the fight to make coming off of UFC 325 was Benoit St. Denis. He looked great against Dan Hooker, finished him off there, and you know, he's put himself up in that kind of top six spot, and he's the only one within the range of Armin. And you get another win if you're Armin, you're right back there. Do you think that'd be a good fight?
I think it's a great fight, yeah. I don't see why Armand wouldn't do it. You can't sit around, you know. I think that's the worst thing to do as a fighter, is sit around and wait for your shot, because time just goes by too fast.
Yeah, I feel like the other fight to make is probably Paddy Pimblett and Dan Hooker as well. Those two are beefing pretty good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. That would be perfect for the soap opera. Yeah,
definitely. You mentioned Armin's wrestling there. Curious, what do you think of this real American freestyle that's kind of taken over the sport a little bit? They're allowing a lot of guys to compete over there. It seems like the money is good. What have you thought of the product so far?
I think it's awesome. It's amazing. It's great for these, the, you know, obviously former fighters that can, you know, still compete, still not have to get hit in the head or anything either. And, you know, it's giving a spotlight to wrestling. You know, it's definitely putting wrestling on the main stage. And I mean, wrestling is such a big part of the UFC. It's a big part of who I am and everything. So, yeah, I'm 100% down with RAF.
Yeah. Have they called you? Are you hoping they will at some point?
Yeah, well, the rumor is they're coming to Jersey, so
oh, hell yeah.
There's a possibility. I might have been, you know, working some gut wrenches a little bit lately.
Yeah, that's, and your kids are very big into wrestling, right?
Yeah, yeah. All of my kids wrestle. Actually, my daughter wrestles a little bit, so yeah, we're on the mats all the time.
That's awesome. And are they like, what age are they? What kind of competition do they do at this stage?
Yeah, well, I have one that's a junior, and one that's a freshman, and then my daughter's in fifth grade.
Mm. Okay. Very cool. That's awesome. So are you kind of doing some coaching? Like how, what's it like when you go to their matches? Are you the hyper competitive dad, or do you need to make yourself chill a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely, I'm a Jersey wrestling dad. That's for sure. So if you know anything about that, I'm going to tell you a little bit, but, you know, I coached them all until they were, you know, in high school. So now once they're in high school, I passed them off, and now I get to be just the crazy dad yelling in the stands.
Love that. Okay, last like talking point in relation to these events. Obviously, UFC 324, 325 kicked off this new era with Paramount and the UFC. You alluded to it earlier. No more traditional pay-per-view in the United States. You got these two events for your $8.99 for the month of January. So that feels like a win for any fan. But watching these, you know, a lot of complaints about the number of ads on the first show, not showing the walkouts, the corner work. They seem to rectify that a lot on the second show. The ads were much better placed. What has been like your experience and thoughts on this transition, kind of watching from home and afar?
Yeah, you know, I think they rectified those issues super quick. I mean, that's pretty awesome. You don't really see that in anything nowadays. So the fact that they did that is promising, and it seems like they want to put out a good product. And I mean, for the price, you can't beat it. You know, I was paying for every pay-per-view. So yeah, I think it's awesome. It's going to get in more homes, hopefully, and just more eyes on us. Mm-hmm. I mean, they said the numbers were, you know, because I guess it's worldwide or whatever, but they were, you know, really, really good. So
yeah, I think around 7 million for just the US and Latin America and for 324. So that's a pretty strong number. And once they get all the other markets, you know, linked up to that in Canada here, we still pay the full pay-per-view price because we're on like another deal. So it's not cheap for the Canadian fans, but that'll change eventually, I think. But like generally speaking, do you think this move away from pay-per-view, I mean, awesome for the fans, but what about for the fighters? It seems like over the years, like the baseline or the basement for pay-per-view numbers would kind of drop. Not many people are hitting that tier of their contract where it was opening up and things anyways for pay-per-view points. Talking to a lot of these managers, it's, you know, we're renegotiating contracts for the UFC for a lot more guaranteed money, those type of things. Like, is this a win for the athletes, you think, having that little more security going into your fights?
I think that kind of remains to be seen. Yeah. You know, I know really the people that got back in the day, at least the people that got part of the pay-per-view, you had to be a champion.
Yeah.
So I imagine champions deals would have to get renegotiated. But as far as everyone else, I think the scales will probably still kind of be similar. Hopefully they become bigger just because the pot's bigger now. You know, they re-signed that deal. So I do think, you know, it's going to trickle down. It does take time. Do we get paid what we should get paid? Probably not. But it does get better over time. And is that trickle down effect hopefully happens. And I think in the long run, it's going to be better for us.
Yeah. What about the change in bonuses? Obviously went from a 50K to 100K. They have a 25,000 finish bonus now. You finish any fight, you get that 25K. What kind of difference do you think this can make?
I mean, you know, it's cool. It's great. I'm definitely, you know, I'd rather 100 than 50. So, sure. I mean, that's I think anytime you can get more, it's great. You know, and let the 25,000 finish bonus, that's a little incentive to get guys to finish. But, you know, I've never been in a fight saying, oh, I need that. You know, I want to finish this guy just because I'm like the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah, no, that's what I was wondering. I mean, we haven't, I don't think, seen a radical change in these first two cards in that regard. Like, you know, someone maybe doing something they wouldn't. But my thought, you know, in the first couple weeks of this has been like, if you're an entry level guy and you're on 12 and 12 and you finish your fight as well, you basically double your money, and then maybe that allows you to quit your second job a little bit earlier and focus on the sport more, and maybe that creates better fighters earlier on and just rises the level of everything. That's my optimistic take.
Yeah, well, like we just talked about the 3 and 3, I made that $20,000 bonus. You know, I bought a car with it though.
Still though, I'm sure it was
hey, it's good.
Yeah, well, hopefully it continues to evolve over time. Okay, Frank, a few more things here I wanted to talk to you about. Obviously, you know, don't need to go too much into it. You had the BKFC stuff last year. I know you've talked about it a fair bit, but it seems like you kind of moved on from that. Like, how would you just say retirement has been so far? We're almost 4 years from your final UFC fight.
It's cool, man. I opened up my own academy here about a year and a half ago in my hometown, so that's taken a lot of my time. Obviously, I had that little stint with the bare knuckle thing, never really materialized. But I'm still on the mats every day, obviously, pretty much on my own school or right here. I'm actually at Nicotones. I just got done working out and helping out some guys a little bit. So I'm still in the mix of this other sport and just, you know, chasing my kids around.
Yeah, and I saw you you were training with Islam Makhachev and Khabib back there in November, right, before Islam fought in New York.
Yeah, they came out. They trained at my school and Nick's school a little bit, you know, to get acclimated here to Jersey. So I got to be around them, which was awesome to be around them. For our guys to be around those guys, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, what do you just make of Islam? This guy's incredible. He's tied with Anderson Silva for the most consecutive wins in UFC history. Two-division champion now. Looked unbelievable against Jack Del Maddalena. Like, he is he's something special, in my opinion.
No, very special. And, you know, he was here for when Dustin Poirier, the fight as well, he came. So it was cool to kind of see both camps and see one was at 155, one's at 170, and how he prepares. You know, there's a reason he's the best in the world.
Yeah, who would you find the most intriguing challenge for him next? Welterweight is so good. There's guys like Ian Garry and Michael Morales and Carlos Prochas. Unfortunately, we just heard Shavkat Rakhmonov is going to be out for maybe another year with another injury, which is really unfortunate, but it's still a very good weight class.
Yeah, I would honestly, I think all those guys are kind of favorable matchups for Islam based on the styles, but Rakhmonov would have been the one I would have been most interested in, you know, just based on the you know, he can grapple and stuff like that.
What about Usman? Does that fight appeal to you at all?
Yeah, honestly, it does. It does. I mean, I get why Islam wants that fight. I mean, Usman might be the best welterweight in welterweight history, and I mean, really, you know, as far as matchups goes, like, he probably has the worst matchup for Islam based on his wrestling too.
Yeah, he may be. I'm very curious. And you might get another visit from them soon. I hear some rumblings of maybe another event in Newark in May or so. So
yeah, we love to have
them. Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, New Jersey was such a big part of the sport in the pre-New York days, especially, right? All those events that we'd have out there. Do you feel like, you know, the sport is in a good place in your state, like from regional shows and things like that, and just kind of the trickle down that we talk about?
Yeah, we there's still a strong MMA presence here in Jersey. Cage Fury's in Jersey, Ring of Combat, Dead Serious, you know, and then obviously a lot of promotions right in like the Philly area and New York area. So yeah, you know, we got guys, you know, even our local guys, we have a few guys that are Luca Fernandez and Eric Nolan. This kid Nick Galante's coming up, who's I think going to be in the UFC pretty soon. So, you know, we got the next crop coming up.
Yeah, and in this academy, like, are you interested in cornering guys, or is it mostly in-house, you know, coaching in the room?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You know, if it doesn't mess with my kids wrestling, I'm always available to help guys out.
Yeah, that's the first priority. And then you have your podcast as well, the Champ and the Tramp. Tell me a little bit about that. If anyone hasn't caught that yet, why should they tune in? Doesn't feel like it's not combat sports exclusive, that's for sure, from what I've seen.
Yeah, no, it's not combat sports exclusive. We always cover, like, you know, whatever combat sports going on, but it's just two bozos kind of, you know, bullshitting in my basement. We do have guests on. We've had some pretty interesting. We had the real Alaskan Avenger, if you've ever heard of him. He was hunting pedophiles. He got like the sex registry list and went and hunted like three pedophiles. So we definitely spoke to some, you know, interesting people. We've been doing it for, geez, almost 6 years now. It's fun. You know, it's in my basement, little bro session, hour a week, and, you know, something to do.
Yeah, definitely. Well, last thing here, Frankie, before I let you go, and appreciate the time so much. Like, you know, we talk about the 19 years since the UFC debut. It's a huge turning point for this kind of new era. Do you feel like the sport is in a good place right now and continually growing? Like, do you always say, like, you want to leave something better than you found it, so to speak. Do you feel like you're seeing something better, significantly better than you found it, and like the health of this industry and this business moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, look, we're not, it's in more homes, more people are watching it. That keeps happening. It's just going to be more, just going to get more mainstream, you know, more people understanding. I mean, I think you could put, like, UFC is like a household name now, you know, like, along with the four core sports. I mean, you got to say five now, because UFC is it, and we don't have an off season, you know? So yeah, I think we're only going up from here.
Yeah, no, truly, it's a fascinating time, and yeah, some potential big fights coming up here. I appreciate you sorting through, I think, two of the most interesting weight classes in the sport right now at featherweight and lightweight. So this has been a very big treat, Frankie. I really appreciate it. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Frankie Edgar for that. Had a lot of fun going down memory lane there, getting his thoughts on the state of two weight classes, which he was very much a founding father and important member of for some crucial years there in the mid-2010s. Just means a whole lot to have a legend like Frankie Edgar here and share so much of his time. That was a lot of fun and very insightful. I appreciated all of that and glad to see that he is in a good place in retirement. And that does it for today's show, but does not do it for this week. We're going to have a second episode of The Bonfire coming up later this week. Joining me will be PFL commentator Dan Hardy, and we're going to do something a little off the beaten track for this podcast, all PFL podcasts coming up later this week with Dan Hardy. We're going to preview all the storyline, all the divisions. What can this organization do to become bigger in 2026, a crucial year for PFL? And Dan Hardy will be joining me to discuss all that. So be on a lookout for that conversation in the next few days here on the channel, the audio feeds, everything like that. As I said earlier, please make sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment, share with a friend, et cetera, et cetera. Whether it's on the audio feed, the video feed, or both, do us a favor here. It would mean a lot. So that does it for this edition of the Bonfire Podcast. And until next time, I'll see you all back here by the Bonfire. Mm-hmm.